Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 201 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of May 11th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining Man, I'm just on the ball. And joining me tonight is PlayStation Black Disc Dan Ryan.
Starting off the next 200 episodes with a bang.
Yeah.
So good.
The two of us just got done commentating a retro game tournament, so we thought it might be fun to try to invent one of our own. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, Dan, what's new with you?
Well, I'm going to spoil God of War here in a minute, Chris.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and get through this other thing first, though.
Okay.
Xyla Duval.
Yeah, Xyla Duval is full of shit.
Okay.
And it is hilarious.
I have no idea what that means. I am out of the loop this week. I read that in the script, and I was like, I gotta know.
I needed to write it down, because it's like, all right, so this kind of interesting thing happened in the Atari Age forum. Not the forums, though, the Facebook page. And there was just this conversation that popped up that I thought was kind of fascinating, because I had never really considered it before. But, like, these folks were talking about, you know, how much they loved Atari, and then it turned into, like, this Nintendo sucks rant. Like, Atari's way better than Nintendo. Like, no, Nintendo's shit. Their games are overrated, and they're a bunch of garbage. Atari was doing way better stuff at that time. And
I'm thinking, objectively, no.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, wow, that's kind of an interesting perspective. And so I started to try to play with it. Like, all right, well, let's think about what was Atari's output at its peak compared to Nintendo's at its peak. Like, not comparing Adventure to Zelda specifically, because, you know, that's ridiculous. I just think Zelda's a better game. And I love me some Adventure, but Zelda took a lot of what Adventure did and did it, I think, a lot better.
Well, that's not comparable.
Exactly. They're very different kinds of animals. But I wound up having some relatively interesting conversations. There were a couple people that were still pretty snarky about, like, no, Nintendo's garbage. And they started to kind of lean towards, like, oh, I don't like their business practices. And, like, okay, I dare you to elaborate on that. They just release Amiibos and, you know, $80 boxes of cardboard. I'm like, oh, good. Haven't heard that lazy-ass complaint before. Like, yep, literally an $80 box of cardboard. No engineering or anything went into it.
That's all it is.
Just a bunch of trash in a box. And they slap their name on it and put it on a shelf, and that's literally what happens. Yep. So that kind of lazy argument stuff kind of really bugs me. But a couple of folks just kind of brought some... I just thought it was a fun conversation. Except this lady, Xyla Duval, was just like... She was just jumping down my throat about, like, no, all these things that you're saying are the worst things about Nintendo. All their arcade ports are trash. And I'm like, yeah, Kung Fu was trash, because I'm pretty sure that was a pretty spot-on arcade port. And I mentioned Marble Madness, and she was like, Marble Madness is, like, the worst thing ever. You've probably never played the original. I'm like, yeah, I played the arcade game a ton of times. Wow, I love the NES version. I think it was a very smart conversion. It was done by Rare. David Wise did a great job of remastering Brad Fuller's original soundtrack. I mean, I think it's a brilliant port. And she was hilariously, like, full bore, just like, no, you're wrong, Nintendo's awful, and Atari's the best thing that's ever happened to the world. And I was like, all right, cool, well, you're an idiot, and I want to write this down so I don't forget it.
All right, then. Ta-da. I thought I missed something bigger than...
Oh, no, just a fun little BS conversation on there. But no, I thought trying to compare Atari at its peak, like really comparing the 2600 library for what it did at that time to the NES library to what it did at its time, because they were both like huge, and like they were the definition of video games in their respective eras, you know? So that was just something I had never really considered before, and I'd never really heard anybody say that just Atari is flat out better than Nintendo. I'd never really heard that argument before, and thought it was crazy. And I think it still kind of is, but it's more interesting than I'm giving it credit for, because there are a few categories that I would say Atari beats Nintendo in. particularly in like straight up like good looking hardware, like comparing what a their Atari's systems look like to like what Nintendo's systems look like. Yeah, I think Atari consoles are way cooler looking than like the Super Nintendo and its weird curtainy squiggly thing on the bottom and whatnot. I mean, sure, Atari 7800 is a really slick looking system.
Man, could I not give a fuck less. I mean, honestly though, like at the end of the day, if the new God of War was like playable on a system that looked like a fucking driftwood clock, whatever, I don't give a shit.
That's true. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. That's what I kept coming back to. Like, at the end of the day, it's about the games.
Ridiculous, nothing of an argument.
Yeah, and Charlotte Duvall's argument was like, what did Nintendo do? They showed up and filled a void because nobody else was making games, and all the only good games they have are Mario, Metroid, and Zelda. I'm like,
I mean, that's just, you know me, I am not the first one to jump in and defend Nintendo with fanboy rage, but it's just objectively not true.
Exactly. I didn't even need to turn on my fanboy rage. I was just like, all right, I'm just going to calmly point out that Mega Man exists, you know, and just leave that there and move on.
I mean, even if you just look at first party Nintendo.
Yeah, even if you just look at that.
That's weird. That's a weird argument.
It is a weird argument, but I had a lot of fun with it. And at the end of the day, most of us were, you know, agreed to disagree relatively politely, which is one of those strange things that rarely happens on the internet.
Yeah, that never happens.
Meanwhile, today I spent my time actively avoiding jumping on the, because Nintendo announced the details of their online, and they're like, and one of the executives said, we're not releasing classic games under the Virtual Console moniker on Switch. And everyone's like, they're not releasing retro games on Switch. The only way to get them is through their online service, and they're never going to release these games, and it's stupid. Nintendo's dumb, and they're doomed, and they're terrible. My Switch is collecting dust. They don't release any good games ever. I'm like, whoa, calm the hell down, Internet. They just said they weren't using the Virtual Console name anymore. Wow.
I got to tell you, hot takes and outrage culture are what's wrong with you millennials, right?
It's the headlines, too, because every headline is like, Nintendo has killed the Virtual Console, or Virtual Console games are officially not coming to Switch. And, like, they're just twisting all these things to make it sound like Nintendo's not releasing retro games on their system outside of paying for their online service, which, that's a conversation for another time. I mean, I think it's pretty neat, but...
What? That's so...
It's just this sensationalism all over today, and I was happy that by the end of the day I started seeing posts on like the latecomers to posting crap headlines like that. Like Destructoid posted something like 4 PM, and all the comments were just like, "This is dumb. They're not doing that. They're just not using the Virtual Console name. You're late to the party. We've already solved this," kind of a thing. But
we've already outraged and move on to 6 other things by this point.
Seriously. Jesus. But it was really something, man. Today was just, I have such a hard time scrolling past those kind of dumb comments.
I know. I do too.
I did just post one earlier today that I just, it made me chuckle. Cause somebody had posted a, let's see. I won't use any names, but I just went full sarcasm mode. Dean. Yeah, we'll call him Dean. They're talking about how Nintendo's giving away the 20 games if you sign up for their service, and this guy says Nintendo gives nothing away. They just seem desperate. And then somebody replied, "There haven't been any decent Switch releases since Mario, so they should be. Me Too ports and remakes don't count." If they didn't give these games away for free, these exact same people would be like, they should have just given those games away for free.
I can't believe that Nintendo is charging all of this money for Mario Brothers. Who even wants to play Mario Brothers? I've already played Mario Brothers. That's what... I beat God of War, Chris.
Yes, let's back off of this. So, you beat God of War.
So we're gonna go ahead and tag this as spoilers. I'm starting... let's see how long the conversation goes. It's 14 minutes and 40 seconds because like there's 2 major things that I'm going to spoil here.
All right.
So if you haven't finished God of War, if you don't want it spoiled, please fast forward however long Evan edits his own voice into saying...
To avoid all spoilers, please fast forward 11 minutes and 20 seconds. Once again, to avoid all spoilers, please fast forward 11 minutes and 20 seconds. Thank you.
So, okay. Absolutely amazing game. First thing, there is no final boss fight. You spend all of this time, like, ramping up. And, I mean, there is a final boss fight, but you don't realize it's the final boss. Early on in the game, as you are just, like, I mean, half an hour into it, maybe, you are sitting at your house with your son. Kratos and Atreus are sitting there, and there is a knock on the cabin door. And there's a tattooed Viking-looking motherfucker standing outside, and you don't know who he is, right? And, I mean, he's very clearly not Thor, because he doesn't have his giant fuck-off hammer, but that's about the only thing that you can discern from this first encounter. And it is this epic fucking fight, and just crazy. So, cut to a little bit later, you're going through parts of the game, you meet a witch in the woods. You don't know who she is at first either. She just says, you know, she's a witch and the witch in the woods, whatever. So eventually you find out that the witch in the woods is Freya. She has been divorced from Odin. They have separated. She is banished from traversing across the realms, whatever, whatever. And you find out that the god that you fought earlier was her son, Baldur. Okay? You fight Baldur like 3 or 4 times in the game, and each time it's fucking nuts. So there eventually comes a point where Freya is trying to reconcile with Baldur, because there was a time when she made him invincible. So not just an immortal god, but also invincible. He can't feel any pain, can't be hurt, any of that shit. But because of that, he also can't feel hot or cold. He can't feel anything. Naturally, as you can imagine, in a timeless existence, not being able to have any sensations would drive you a little bit fucking nuts. And Baldur is batshit crazy in this game. This final fight that Kratos and Baldur have is fought in front of a frozen, dead giant that Freya is also manipulating while you're fighting. So you're fighting Baldur, and it's this crazy epic battle, and as you're doing it, Freya is, like, manipulating the hand of this giant to, like, come down and scoop Kratos and Baldur up to try and get him to stop fighting. And it's fucking nuts. Just crazy. So you go through, and you get up to the point where you beat the shit out of Baldur, and he eventually he's able to feel by this point, because he has been stabbed by a mistletoe arrow that was on Atreus's, was holding his quiver together.
So he has to kiss him?
No. Yes. No. Mistletoe is the only thing that could break this, this spell that Baldur was under.
Cause he has to kiss him.
Cause he has, yes. Sure.
I should make games.
You really should. It's a weird game. It goes off in a weird direction. You thought not having the Blades of Chaos and the new camera angle was wacky. Oh, boy.
And the credits roll, and it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
It's like, what?
Wow, this took a strange turn.
This was not at all what I expected.
Kratos puts on a Santa hat and flies off into the distance to deliver violent toys to children.
Honestly, that's why it gets Game of the Year, because it goes in a brave new direction.
Not to send you too far off the rails, but I was just watching the most recent Jimquisition about how wonderful God of War is. And I saw some video where he was using the Blades of Chaos.
We're getting there.
Oh, hold on. Okay.
There's a thing. So anyway, so you go through this whole fight with Baldur, and eventually you get to the point where you beat the shit out of Baldur. The fight's over, and Kratos and Atreus have a discussion on whether or not they should kill Baldur. This is relatively towards the end of the game. Atreus now knows about Kratos, knows that he is a god from another pantheon, that he is from Sparta, that he, you know, whatever. Freya comes in and says, you know, like, I need to reconcile with my son. I will handle this. And if the only thing that is going to give Balder peace is killing me, then that is what is going to happen. Kratos cannot abide by that because he doesn't want to see any more needless death necessarily. So he kills Balder himself. He just like walks up behind him and fucking snaps his neck. Freya naturally is not very happy about this. That will happen in whatever sequels come down. So after you go through this whole thing, Kratos starts talking like as you're wandering the world map of like, we can either go to Jotunheim, which is the highest peak in all the realms, so we can let off his wife's ashes. That's the whole point of the game, is you're trying to get her ashes up to the highest point in the realm. Or you can start prepping for your final encounter because you have no idea what's going to happen when you get to Jotunheim. Jotunheim had been locked off. Jotunheim is the land of the Frost Giants. Okay. So, I spent all this time like gearing up to get ready for this final fight. And when you get to Jotunheim, there's no fight. You walk to the top of the peak, you spread her ashes, fucking credits. And it was brilliant. Because it totally subverted everything you were expecting. The other thing that made it okay is that there's this little bit of storytelling that happens beforehand, where as you go throughout the game, there's these like wooden like boards up throughout the world, and as you open them, they tell a story, right? So Atreus comes over and he reads, you know, what's happening. He reads the runes, and there's, you know, pictures and all this. And when you get up to the top of Jotunheim, as you're making your way through, you start to see these pictures of Kratos and Atreus going to the top of Jotunheim and like spreading his mother's ashes. And there's all this like, how could his mother know? And it was, so it turns out that Atreus's mother, Kratos's wife in this game, was a giant. And her name was Laufey. Does that mean anything to you?
Wasn't Laufey Loki's dad?
Kratos says, we named you Atreus. And Atreus says to him, it's a good thing you didn't want to go with what my mother wanted to call me. It was Loki.
Cool.
And, like, that realization of, oh, shit. Like, Kratos is Loki's dad. Mm-hmm. Laufey was Kratos' wife. She was the last of the Frost Giants. And you just, like, as you're walking back from the peak, after this bombshell thing hits you, you were expecting this giant fight. You don't get a giant fight. You find out that your son is fucking Loki. And you just walk back down to the world tree. It's the end of the game. That's it. It's like, oh my god, what the fuck was that? So you can go and you can, like, travel back to your house, and when you get back to your house, there's, you know, an action button by the bed, and you get into bed, and, you know, Kratos says, you know, like, we've earned our rest and whatever. And they lay down, and it says, you know, a thing pops up on the screen years later, and there's a bang on the door, and Kratos and Atreus go out, and, you know, like, they're getting ready for a fight, and there's this shadowy figure that's just standing there. And he pulls aside his robe, and Mjolnir is there. And then it just fucking cuts. And that's it. It was like, what? What is going on? This unbelievable bit of storytelling. Absolutely fucking brilliant. Absolutely fucking brilliant. The other thing that happened is that there is, about halfway through the game, you get to a part where Atreus gets sick. And you take him to Freya, and Freya says, the only thing that's going to kill him is in hell. But your axe, the Leviathan axe, is frost-powered. It's not going to work. You need to get a different weapon. And Kratos looks at her and, you know, says, in order to do that, I need to return to a life that I thought I had left in the past. And you go back to your house, you sail on this boat back to your house, and as you're sailing, in the boat pops up an image of Athena. And, like, then it just pans away again, and it's like, oh, shit, fucking Athena. You get to the house, and you go into the floorboards of the house, and you pull out the Blades of Chaos. And as he starts wrapping the chain around his fucking forearms again, Athena comes in and starts talking to him, and they have this whole back and forth about how Kratos is not her weapon of war any longer. And then you have the Blades of Chaos for the rest of the game, and they work so incredibly well with this new camera angle.
Yeah, they looked awesome.
It's so fucking good. And getting those blades back, like, because I wasn't sure, the new camera angle, it's very different than previous God of Wars. I mean, you look at it, it is a very, very different style of game. But, man, they nailed the way that it plays. It is so perfect. The combat is so much fun. And the combos and everything you can do, like, you can do Blades of Chaos into the Leviathan axe and do different shit and juggle people around and, like, just it's just insane. Like, watching it does not really do it justice. It feels so good to play. But, man, like, once I got those back, it was like, yeah, there's nothing that's going to beat this for Game of the Year. There is no way. It was a stunning achievement.
Cool. I mean, I don't even know what else to say.
I'd like to play it sometime. I know you want to play it, and yeah. Like, I've never played anything like it. I really haven't. So okay, we can end the spoilers now. The other thing that's cool about the game, though, is that once you finish it, there's all of this other stuff to go and do. Like, 8 Valkyries have been corrupted by Odin. You have to go save the Valkyries, and to save the Valkyries, you have to beat them in combat, and they are fucking hard. Really proper difficult. And not cheap, just hard. And it's so much fun to play against them and to figure out their patterns and the different attacks and using the new combat system. And like, when the Valkyrie will spring up into the air, you can throw the axe, and as she falls, you can run over and do a crazy combo and then pull the axe back, and there's different moves. Like, once you upgrade certain attacks, like, you'll throw the axe, you can go up, you know, punch a couple of times, kick once or twice, and then when you call the axe back to you, he does, like, another special move on top of that. Like, Kratos will grab the axe because it flies back to your hand like Mjolnir. So you'll grab it and then, like, spin around and hit, like, 3 more times with the axe. And then there's just all of this crazy stuff you can do. So figuring out how to do all of that while you're playing against the Valkyries is really awesome. And then there's just all these little, like, side quests and side missions that are actually, like, worthwhile and add to the overall story. Because the whole time you're going to do them, as you're, like, sailing around the Lake of Nine to get from place to place, you have the detached head of Mimir strapped to your belt. So he just tells you, like, Norse mythology stories as you're sailing around. It's awesome. It's like story time with Mimir. I'm just going to go paddle for a little bit and find out some cool old shit. It is an amazing game. I mean, I imagine it's similar. Like, I imagine that the Valkyrie fights are kind of similar to some of the stuff in Breath of the Wild. Like, who were the... Was, like, completing the shrines or something like that? Wasn't there, like, a big fight? Or no? What were the big fights in Breath of the Wild?
Oh, Lionel's.
Okay, yeah. Something similar to that, like, where there's a certain number that exist in the world that you can go kill as, like, a challenge and that sort of thing. And different side quests and whatnot in this kind of big, sprawling world.
Yeah.
It's very cool. You can also unlock... I just went to... last night I was playing it. If you collect language ciphers throughout the game, like little hidden shit throughout, you can unlock Niflheim and Muspelheim.
Muspelheim.
So there's 2 other, like, realms that you can go to. It's just... It's so cool. Like, I finished the game and I'm still playing it. Like, I will probably end up getting the platinum on this game, which is something I very rarely do.
No, I look forward to someday being able to play it. It does look and sound pretty. Like, every time I see some piece of this game, I'm like, damn, that looks nice.
It is
quite good.
It is. It's the first time. Well, not the first time. Horizon Zero Dawn, I was very happy about as well. But, like, really solidly, like, PS4 Pro, 4K TV, playing this game, like, okay, we've officially moved into the next generation. You know, I know we're still PS4 Pro and Xbox One and whatnot, but this is officially kind of, this is where the technology needs to be to kind of push this stuff forward.
Yeah, it's really where it's like, I'm seeing things like God of War and Horizon are really like, okay, that is definitely a generation above, above like where Switch is. Like, not saying that I have any problem with looking at Switch games, but like,
no,
I was talking during our Game of the Year segment, like Breath of the Wild looks wonderful, looks fantastic until you put it directly next to Horizon.
And then you're like, and wow, then it looks like garbage.
Okay, that's way better.
Yeah, you're like, wow, that doesn't even look remotely the same. Yeah, you know, and once you play this shit on a 4K TV with a PS4 Pro, and I imagine, to be fair to Xbox owners, I imagine it's very similar if you have an Xbox One X, that's the powerful one, right?
Sure, why not?
Whatever the Project Scorpio was.
Yeah.
I still want to call it the Scorpio because I still think that's a better name.
It's a better name.
You
know, the Xbox.
Like, yeah, the Xbox. I imagine if you're playing, you know, when Crackdown 3 is out and you're playing that on a 4K TV with the more powerful system, like, I imagine that will have somewhat of the same effect, but I don't even know. Like, I've never played a game that looked like this, that moved like this. The storytelling was just top-notch. Like, I'm just completely blown away. And that happens so rarely now in video games. You know, we've been doing this show for 200 episodes. You know, so that's how many years have we been doing this for? 4.5 years or whatever? And, you know, we got 25 years of video game experiences before that. The fact that there's still stuff that comes out where you're like, oh shit, I just need to stop for a minute. And damn, like it's an amazing thing.
It's pretty fun for me to be on this end of this kind of conversation, because usually it's me that's like unabashedly gushing about something that I love. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of nice to hear you enjoy a game this much, especially like, again, in such a short period of time, because Sony just knocked it out of the park with Horizon the year before. So
I can't imagine what they have left. Like, I can't even imagine what E3 is going to be for us this year. And when I mean you and me, like, what does Sony have left to announce? Because they got to come with something. I mean, we already know about Death Stranding. We know about Ghosts of Tsushima, which looks absolutely incredible. You know, H1Z1, Last of Us 2, Spider-Man, the Spyro remake. Like, we know about a lot of really big things, but you have to imagine that they're coming with something.
Yeah, like, I don't think that we've seen their next year's, like, 2019's tentpole. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we're just like, we don't know what Nintendo's 2019 tentpole is going to be, although it's probably Metroid Prime.
Right, but that's the thing. I mean, Nintendo's been so crazy with it, of like, oh yeah, hey, by the way, in this Nintendo Direct, yeah, there's going to be Inklings in Smash, and it's going to be out this year. So enjoy, you know.
We'll talk to you around E3, and everyone's like, hey, so like, all right, we're getting new Smash this year, but like, we're going to do a whole E3 episode in a couple of weeks. So,
and the craziest thing about it is that it is just as possible for us to have absolutely zero to talk about after E3 as us to be like, so yesterday Nintendo announced that Metroid was coming out next week. What? No shit. I wasn't ready. And a new Punch-Out and Kid Icarus. And you're like, well, fuck, thanks. Appreciate it.
It won't be a podcast that week because I'll literally be dead.
I'll co-host with Evan. We'll just talk more about God of War.
Before we get to our feature topic, I don't know, 45 minutes or so into the episode, I just wanted to talk briefly about, I finally started Bayonetta 2.
Nice.
Which well, clearly isn't on the same plateau as God of War. It is. I'm not too far into it. I'm only like chapter two, but it is already so much better than the first game.
Really?
Yeah, it really. And I really enjoy the first game. Like you heard me talk about it week after week. I was really digging that game, but it's already so. The little things that were kind of like just kind of felt a little rotten. Like there were some QTEs that would pop up that are just, they'll kill you. And like, if you don't get it within the microsecond that the button's on the screen, then you're dead. Then you have to, you know, do it over again. And
that sucks. That is
yeah. That
kind
of stuff sucks. It just kind of takes some of the fun out of it. And like, instead they just made them into cinematics. Cause why the fuck do you need to press a button to watch her do something crazy?
Right.
And, also the, there are these, like torture kill moves that you can do that are all hilarious. And they would require you to mash the button super fast, and they kind of slowed down how fast you have to mash the button to maximize the damage on those. And that's pretty nice.
That's a nice quality of life improvement.
Exactly. There are a lot of little things like that that just make the game run better. It feels a lot better, too. The combat just feels more... I don't know if intense is the right word. It feels a lot more tangible, the hits and the moves. And that's really great. Cause I mean, the combat in Bayonetta is already great to begin with, but just having it kind of just next level tweaked for Bayonetta 2 is really nice. But the biggest improvement on this is the visuals, which I wasn't expecting, just because, I mean, the first Bayonetta is definitely showing its age. I mean, we're talking about a relatively early PS3 360 era game, and it's like once you're playing Bayonetta 2, I'm like, holy crap, this was a Wii U game. Like, this is how far graphics had come in even just that amount of time, and it is a really, really nice looking game. Like, it's visually really impressive, but what's the most impressive thing about it to me from 1 to 2 is how much more color there is. Because the first one definitely came out in that, you know, post Gears of War era where everything had to be
brown,
brown and gunmetal gray.
Brown.
And Bayonetta is, the game itself is so colorful. Like, its content is just, it's ridiculous. And the action set pieces are also just even more over the top, which is great. Like, you start off the game and this is just crazy circumstances, but there's just color everywhere in this game. It's no longer washed out in the least. It's very bright, and there's lots and lots of different colors happening all over the place, and the game looks so much better for it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is awesome. It's just wonderful. So I'm looking forward to playing a lot more of it when I can, just you know, finding fewer and fewer instances to sit down and play that game. I have played a little bit more Kirby, which is also still great. I'm in no rush to finish it, except I might want to finish it before I try to get Donkey Kong again, because ever since the reviews are coming out and people have been talking about it a lot in all the groups that I'm involved in, I'm like, man, I really want to play this again. And I have the store credit at Level Up, and I also have a bunch of rewards, so I could literally get the game for free. And now it's just like, all right, do I get this game for free and then buy Mario Tennis when it comes out, or just hold off and get Mario Tennis for free? And kind of leaning towards getting Tropical Freeze for free, because, I mean, why not, right? It's literally free. So pretty good price to pay for something that I've played and beaten already.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not paying full price for it. The only way I'm getting it is if I get some sort of deep discount on it, and doesn't get a lot deeper than free. And just looking at the videos, I'm like, I genuinely want to play this again, but I don't want to fire it up on my Wii U. I want to play it on the go. I want to play it in bed. I want to do what I do with my Switch. But, you know, right now Kirby's scratching the platforming itch enough to stave it off. Plus, my local store didn't get the game yet, so it's not like I'm in a huge rush anyways. The last thing I wanted to mention is the thing with the pinball arcade. Did you hear about that?
I did. That's weird.
That's brutal, man.
Yeah, it sucks.
So in case you missed the news, the pinball arcade lost a lot of its licenses, the two biggest ones actually, and they're losing all these tables. And I'm super glad I bought what I did on the Switch when it was up for that brief period of time, because if I didn't, then I'd never get them, because it was pulled from the eShop a while back for rights issues, which they never really elaborated on, something tells me it has something to do with the end, this contract ending. They're most probably likely. Like, don't put out a fresh new version of it and sell it for 3 months before your contract ends, dicks.
Yeah.
That's probably how that went, if I had to venture a guess. But there were a couple other tables I kind of wanted to buy. I mean, granted, I don't know that getting the pack with the two Doctor Who tables was worth another $35, but
that's the only thing about it. It's so expensive.
It is. It is, depending on which pack you get, because like the pack that I got was $35, but it was 22 tables. Like, all right, that's.
But are if you that was a retail. All...
Yeah, I've played every single one of them, actually.
Right. I mean, you've played every single one of them, but
I'm regularly playing Twilight Zone Taxi, Twilight Zone Taxi, Black Hole. John loves Black Hole. What's the magic one that Karen loves? Theater of Magic, the Harley Davidson one, the Gophers one, and there's one other one that John really likes. So I'm playing seven of them, like, a lot, and Taxi and Twilight Zone, I'm still playing, like, maybe once a day. So, I mean, I've definitely gotten my money's worth out of it. And if this was a pack that was sold, like, in retail, I'd be like, yeah, oh, $30, $35 for this? Sure, it's a pinball collection. Okay.
Okay.
And it just feels weird because it was a, here's free software and these are DLC packs for that price.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, like, if they just sold this.
It feels crazy.
It does. It feels crazy. And then when you get to the other packs, when it's like, well, this one only has 12 tables, but it's $35. Like, yeah, no, I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah.
But the one that had the two Doctor Who tables in it was $35, and it was like, I think, 19 or 20 tables. I was like, all right, that's kind of pushing it, which is why I didn't buy it immediately. That and I just spent $35 on friggin' pinball games, but
right,
you know, I was gonna go buy it, and then they had to pull it off the Wii U the Switch eShop. I was like, damn, all right, well, I'll just wait till it comes back, and now it's not coming back. I mean, the game's coming back to Switch, but with none of those tables, so that blows.
wouldn't be surprised at all if there's a new, like, Midway, because it's Midway, and who was the other one? Was it Bally?
Gottlieb, yeah, I think it was Midway and Bally. I can actually check.
Would not be surprised if there is a new game.
Some sort of other collection that features those games in it, yeah. Or they'll just let it lie because, I mean, they don't particularly care. It's not like the company that owns those properties. Yeah, it was Williams and Bally.
Williams and Bally, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's brutal. I feel kind of bad for these guys. I mean, this is clearly a team that is in a bit over their heads. What the hell is this company called again? Farsight Studios? Because there have been people complaining all over their social media about all these incompatibility issues, like tables with weird gravity or this version just doesn't even load. And they've been complaining about them forever.
Yeah.
And they keep saying they're promising fixes, and it's just one thing after another, but they keep trying to, you know, also release new content and put it on new platforms. I don't even know if the Wii U version of this ever came out, which is funny because it's like, it's listed right on their Facebook page. It's like, there it is. The 360, Xbox One, PS3, PS4, Vita, iPad, iPhone, Android, Ouya, Wii U. Okay.
Ouya.
Nothing like having the Ouya logo blazoned across your Facebook page. So, yeah,
love
I mean,
it.
That definitely these guys are in a bit over their heads. But I do appreciate what they're doing. And I don't think anyone else is doing it is the thing. Like, I don't think anyone else is really going after these tables and trying to recreate them this way. And I'd love to see it happen. I'd love to see more people be able to play Twilight Zone and Taxi and Theater of Magic and whatnot. But something tells me these licenses are just going to go away for a little while, which is freaking sad. But for anyone who has a platform other than the Switch, you can still get these tables until June 30th. So,
and you should, because there's some really, really good stuff.
Yeah, not all the packs are necessarily worth it, but the first DLC pack is the one that I have, and it's got just fantastic content in there. Just a ton of great content. And the Star Trek Next Generation is in there. Like, just great tables. And there are, you know, some other packs that I think might be worth it too. But that's a shame.
It
Anywho.
Is. All right.
All right.
So.
So. We, at Free Comic Book Day, it was just this past Saturday, which is always every year, the first Saturday in May, Dan and I were asked to run commentary for the finals of the Level Up Entertainment Free Comic Book Day Retro Game Challenge. And I lent them my copy of Nintendo World Championships 1990, the repro card I have. And we did, you know, we had Scott on a few weeks ago. So, you know, he was the guy running the tournament. And, well, that all went really well. Dan and I had a lot of fun commentating on it.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. It was.
And everybody was super nice. And it was a great event. And there were people watching. And
yeah, it was a good time.
It was good times.
So Dan and I were trying to figure out what the hell to talk about this week, and Dan had the idea of like, well, what if
we just talked for 45 minutes about nothing?
Yeah, about nothing. We could call it here, and it would be a complete show. But
it really would.
We're assholes, so here we go. Dan thought it would be a really cool idea. Well, what if there was a PlayStation World Championships, a la the Nintendo World Championships? And I said, well, that sounds like a hoot. Let's do that. So we approached this in two different directions. Direction number one was like the 1990 World Championships, where there was like this one thing. You had a certain amount of time to play, and you'll blow through these games, and whoever has the highest score at the end wins. And that's what Dan took. Dan took figuring that out. Now, I took a different direction, which we'll talk about after the break, which is what if they did a modern-style PlayStation World Championship similar to the 2015 and 2017 Nintendo World Championships, where it's like this giant tour de force through all of PlayStation history and trying to do different things on all these different games and kind of elimination rounds based on different stuff. So let's talk about Dan's first. Give us the rundown on your PlayStation World Championships, your 1990 PlayStation World Championships.
So I am I'm pretty happy with what I came up with here, and I really want this to exist now. Now, to be fair, a bit of a caveat, I suppose, to some of the things that I'm going to mention. It's been a long time since I've played some of these things, so this might actually be too much time. It might not be enough time. Let's be honest, I'm not going to put that much work in. I mean, come on. So here we go. Just like the original Nintendo 1990 championship, which was 50 coins in Super Mario Brothers, the first stage of Rad Racer, and then as many points as you could get in Tetris. You had that last chunk of time. However much time you ended up with when you got to Tetris, that was the place to get your the bulk of your points, which our competitors apparently didn't get the memo. Either way,
one of them did,
and won by just an utter landslide. It was a bloodbath.
The other three competitors scored all around like 100,000 points. The first place guy got like 600,000 points.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Not even.
So what I thought would be cool would be to go through each of the PlayStation consoles, including the handhelds, starting with the PS1, ending with the PS4, 15 minutes, okay? 15 minutes, however many points you could get, would give you your final score. So starting at the first one would be the PlayStation 1. You would play Ape Escape. I loved Ape Escape, right? Were you a fan, Chris?
I never really gave it the time of day.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember why. I had
really
a reason. I remember
platformer.
Looking at Ape Escape, and I remember this girl, Stephanie, who worked with me, was saying, like, you got to try this game. Ape Escape's the best. And I was like, meh.
Ah, really, really good platformer. Really, just really fun, really solid. Really made use of the analog sticks in a really interesting way. For those of you who haven't played Ape Escape, you would map different attacks to the buttons, like you had a stun stick and you had net, basically. And depending on whether or not you had the stun stick or the neck or the net, there were all these monkeys running around, and you had to catch them. And you would swing the net with the right analog stick if that's what you had selected. And for certain monkeys, you would swing the stick, collect them, no problem. Other ones you had to stun first, then select them. There was platforming built into it. It was really great. So I thought what would be cool Start off the first level, ape escape, catch 15 monkeys. Quick as you can catch 15 monkeys, they're all running around the level. You got to platform and jump and catch them and stun and the whole thing. Catch your 15, boom, you move on to the next thing. Jumping into the PlayStation 2, which would be the highest score you could get in 1 minute of Rocket 2, or Rocket 2002, in Amplitude. Amplitude was the rhythm game that preceded Guitar Hero. If you have ever played Guitar Hero but don't know what Amplitude is, very similar type of thing, matching up to different songs. Rocket 2002 was this remake of this really incredible Herbie Hancock song that was made for this game. But it's a long song, right? So you want to hold that down to 1 minute, highest score you can get. Your score is going to depend on your button time, right? Okay. After that, jump over to the PSP. Wipeout Pure, one of the launch titles for the PSP, still one of the best racing games. I would argue on damn near any handheld. It is a great, great racing game. The Wipeout games were always great. Pure was an awesome version of it. Finish the first track, fastest time you can, kind of throwing it back to Rad Racer. Right, the world record speed running times of the first track in Wipeout Pure is like a minute and 20 seconds. So, you know, you figure the average player can get through, you know, minute and 45, 2 minutes. That's a good time to play through a racing game. Lots of fun. It looks good. There you go. After you get done with Wipeout Pure, you jump up to the PS3, where you would play in probably the pit of Tartarus in God of War 3. And you would have to get a 500-hit combo. Sounds crazy, not nearly as hard as it seems. But if you remember back to those original God of War games, that original trilogy of seven games, in order to keep the combo going, you had to do a lot of rolling between the different groups of enemies, right? So you would do your Crazy Blades of Chaos combos, or you had the... What were the claws in God of War 3? Get the hell claws. I forget what the fuck they were called.
Bear claws.
Yes, no. Not even a little bit. Dew claw. The dew claws of doom, I believe is what they were. Kratos' dew claws of doom. But there were cool combos that you could do with that. So the quickest you could get a 500-hit combo. The bitch of that one is, like, that would be a really good kind of test. The other ones... You know, you can catch 15 monkeys pretty easy. You can get a score in Amplitude. You will finish the track in Wipeout Pure. Once you get to this God of War 3 stage, that would really be where you would start to separate the competition. Because getting the 500-hit combo is not all that difficult, but it does require a certain amount of finesse to be able to do it. Once you do that, you would jump over to the Vita with Lumine's Electronic Symphony. The puzzle game, we've talked about that before. It's a pretty cool puzzle game. Scoring 2,000 points in that doesn't take all that long if you're pretty good at it. 2,000 points may be a bit much. Maybe 1,000 points. Not like this is real, but if it was, that would be a debatable thing. And then finally, once you scored your 2,000 points, my personal favorite part of it would be jumping over to the PlayStation 4 and doing a home run derby in MLB The Show. As many home runs as you could hit. I thought that would be just such an awesome way to end this. You go through all this crazy stuff, and then you just get to something that most kids have done at one point in their life of, we're just going to sit out in the backyard and play home run derby, and we're just going to hit baseballs and or tennis balls with our wiffle ball bats or whatever. You know, and you could rack up a ton of points.
And it's just a great way to finish out your time.
Yep, a great way to finish out time. I want this to exist, Chris.
I think this as well.
I think this is pretty great. Like, I threw it together, and these were pretty much the first games that jumped out to me. Like, I didn't really waffle on anything. And when I got done, I was like, all right, damn, this is pretty good. I'm pretty happy with myself. I like it.
I think you did darn well.
What do you think? Looking at this, like, what do you think about, like, the time or scores? Anything seem unfair?
I mean, All right, so we're talking about the what we did at the tournament that we were at was, what, 10 minutes?
Mm.
And that was only three games.
Seven. 7 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, 7 minutes. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess this is a little bit double the time. Yeah, no, this works. This works. And it would be all about, you know, each one of these games would have, like, different ways of scoring and give you different multipliers at the end, just like the 1990 competition cart, and then finishing out with the home run derby with the biggest multiplier. That's a great idea. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. And I think it's one of the things where I think the Nintendo World Championship suffers is that there's really not a spot where you can, like, stop and take the temperature of the competition, right? Like, because you can get 50 coins in Mario.
Oh, yeah, the 1990
cart. Almost brain dead. Yeah, know what I mean? Like, oh, it's almost brain dead to get the 50 coins in Mario, and you are going to finish Rad Racer. You know, mm-hmm. Whereas something like this, once you hit God of War 3, if you can't do the 500-hit combo, there's two things you're not getting to.
Yeah, and that's going to demolish your score.
So you really get to a point where you get to take the temperature of a competition, and I think that is a little bit more interesting in this sort of idea anyway.
Agreed. Yeah. No, I like it. I like it very a lot. Cool. Good work. Well, let's take ourselves a very quick break. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, we're going to talk about my prospects on a modern style, modern flavored PlayStation World Championships. You are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around.
Step on the brakes. Now step on the gas.
And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, on an, well, quite frankly, especially crude episode of the Nonstop Comic Shop, Jordan reviews two comics all about everyone's favorite oil company, Roxxon. Including Marvel 2-in-1 number 73, wherein the only other Marvel character named Xavier leads a Roxxon project to drill for oil in a parallel dimension, Cosmerica, which would be heralded as a shrewd NIMBY idea if not for their enslavement of the local cavemen, leading to a revolt headed by the Stone Age Gamer logo, which is admittedly awesome.
Indeed.
There's plenty more, including the nonstop action that comes with FDA regulations, so don't miss Nonstop Comic Shop, Episode 21, Rocks On, Rocked Off.
Okay, two things. Thing number one, Jordan showed me this caveman character, and mm-hmm. he does bear a resemblance to the Stone Age Gamer logo.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie. Not as much as I think he thinks, but I definitely saw the connection. Mm. But after seeing it, I just pictured the Stone Age Gamer character dude. In comics, fighting is awesome.
Which is awesome. I now want to buy Conan Exiles and make the Stone Age Gamer guy and stream it. In fact, Ryan, because I know you listen. Does Ryan listen still? I don't know if he does. Ryan, buy me the Conan Exiles. I will stream Stone Age Gamer. I promise I will cover up the massive dong that I will create. This character. The massive Stone Age Gamer dong.
Next, a few weeks ago, Geekade sent a team of highly trained Genghis to accompany Matt Much at PAX East. While there, Matt and Genghis played all manner of awesome upcoming indie games, and you can watch them do it! That's right, it was recorded for posterity's sake and is available for your perusal over at the Geekade YouBoob channel. while you're there, why not like and subscribe? It's what I do. Yeah, I'm awful at this tonight. I'm awful.
Mm.
Period. Mm-hmm. The end. Show over.
Yeah,
good night.
You're right. Not just tonight.
Not just tonight. I'm just awful.
That's future human being. Finally, everybody loves a good zombie story, but what good is all the action without some genuine feel? What better place to find feels than among a group of Japanese high school girls? Jonathan brings us a new anime offering, featuring a post-apocalyptic world where the characters live at the school they attend, that explores such questions as whether zombies retain muscle memory of their former life and how to bring lightness to such a dark subject without being overly cutesy. Intrigued? Click over to the Anime Annex, School Live, to find out more. Or is it School Lit?
I was just going to ask you the same thing, and I meant to ask Jonathan that very thing, but then I figured, it's in text. Yeah, when's it going to come up? Oh, yeah, when we talk about it.
Oh, yeah, every single time one of us reads it.
We're just going to call it School Bill from now on.
Naturally.
That's how you pronounce it. You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com.
School Live.
And we're back. We killed a lot of celebrities over that break.
It certainly did.
So, all right, now it's my turn. We're going to talk about a modern-style PlayStation World Championships, a la the Nintendo World Championships from 2015 and 2017. Because the NWC has been revitalized. Mm-hmm. In fact, there is kind of a flavor of it happening this year. The Splatoon World Championships seem to be kind of like born out of this, at least in the branding. It's still right. Got like the triangle in the background and the World Championships in the same font. It's just Splatoon, which is kind of cute. I hope they go back to this kind of Nintendo World Championships next year, though, because boy, this was really fun. So what they did with the new Nintendo World Championships, I love, is it's kind of like this giant, like a really long tournament, and it's got these two different segments, right? You've got a regular competition and then kind of a loser's bracket that they called the Underground. So like a handful of the people from the first chunk of games that lost, that didn't get to move on, get to compete in the Underground to fight their way back into the competition. So, and the games are all over the freaking map. So last year's, which was, you know, the Switch had been, the Switch was already out. So last year, the games that they involved were Breath of the Wild, Smash for Wii U, Metroid Samus Returns for DS, Balloon Fight for NES, Bird and Beans, which I don't even remember what that is. I think that was a DS game.
I think so.
I don't remember. I was unfamiliar with that one. I feel like I remember it being a DS game, but I could be wrong. More Smash for Wii U, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Donkey Kong Country Returns for Wii, Tetris for Game Boy, Splatoon 2 on Switch, ARMS on Switch, Mario Party 2 for N64, Mario Maker for Wii U, Super Mario Bros. Deluxe for Game Boy Color, and then finished off with Mario Odyssey, which was like, that game wasn't out yet, so it was like, yeah, you get to try something new. So I really like the way this works. I thought this was a really cool way to do a tournament. So, hold on, let me adjust my microphone here. There we go. This is my take on it. All right. Mm-hmm. So now some of these I'm going to need your help with because I don't have enough details of the games that I haven't played yet to really nail this. But I kind of went through all of PlayStation's history and thought of what I could think of, which would be really cool ways to run this kind of thing. So stage one, I think the coolest way to start this would be Rocket League for PS4. Right out of the gate, a bunch of 1v1 matches, all running at the same time. And all the people who win get to move forward. All the people who lose go down into the loser's bracket, into the Underground. Which obviously wouldn't be called the Underground because it's not a Super Mario Brothers reference in the PlayStation world. But you know what I mean.
Although there was the PlayStation
Underground
back in the day.
That's true. So yeah, the PlayStation Underground does work.
And see, I knew that you knew that because that's why you included the PlayStation Black Disc, because those are the demo discs that used to be included in PlayStation Underground.
Well, I was referring specifically to just PlayStation 1 games, which were all on PlayStation Black Discs. Which, you know, if you ever put your copy of Castlevania Symphony of the Night into your CD player and heard Alucard's voice say, "This is a PlayStation Black Disc," and it played some crazy-ass music. It was awesome. Anyway, so, all right, we finished Rocket League.
Which is an excellent choice.
Rocket League's just such a great, and it's so tied to PlayStation. You know, yes, it's out on other platforms, but PlayStation is kind of where it started, you know? So yeah. Next up, we move on to the underground, loser's bracket, and everybody there has to compete to get the highest score they can in stage two of Parappa the Rapper.
Which is stage two?
That's the, all right, we're here, we're sitting in the car, I want you to show me if we can get far, now step on the gas.
Very well done. I wanted to see how long you were going to go with it.
Freaking love Parappa the Rapper, and it's one of the few PlayStation games that really has score in it, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I thought that was a really nice way to go at it. Now, this would be kind of a difficult thing to show off because, like, all right, the NWC cartridge is just like, you know, it's this thing and people take turns playing it. But this would be all kind of happening at the same time. So, but the good thing about it is that the music is always going to play the same no matter what. It's just the different right. sound effects. So they could just have the audio playing from one of the playthroughs and then everybody else gets to wear headphones and do their own thing. But that's how they could broadcast it, as everyone playing it at exactly the same time. So this stage is going to run like exactly how long that stage is. And that's nice. Kind of keeps things moving along. But we're not on an overall time limit thing. So right. there is no way to run out the clock. It's just like going pace by pace. So... back up into the proper stage two, we move on to the PlayStation 3, and we have a race in Mod Nation Racers.
Super fun game.
Yeah, pretty decent kart racing game. I don't have a ton of experience with it, so I didn't pick a specific track, but it's a very PlayStation thing, you know? It was a big brand that they were pushing for a little bit there, and
certainly didn't catch on, I think, the way that they wanted it to.
No.
Or certainly the way that it had the potential to. But now, would you have like a community created aspect to Mod Nation Racers, or just standard stuff?
Probably just standard stuff, or have similar to what they did with Super Mario Maker in the finals. Okay. They had people at Nintendo make stages for the event.
Right, right,
so
right.
So having a bunch of like, you know, PlayStation programmers make a course would probably be
the Kaz Harai inspired stuff, or
exactly just
okay.
Someone at Sony would make a course for the specific event.
Cool. I like it.
Nice. All right. So next on, moving down to the underground, back to the round two of the underground, we're going to pick up the PSP and we're going to finish Gutsman stage and Mega Man Powered Up, which is a PSP exclusive Mega Man game, which is totally freaking awesome if you've never played it. And Gutsman stage is just a classic, and it would be a race to see who can get the best times in finishing Gutsman stage. And depending on how the brackets go, I didn't do all the math, but you know, the people who got the fastest scores would get to stick around, and the people who didn't mm-hmm. Would not.
I like it. Another excellent choice.
Back up
that,
to the
that would give you some again some strategy built into this of are you going for points or time or a combination of the two.
I don't know. Were there points in Powered Up? I know there were points in the original Mega Man, but I feel like that kind of disappeared in Powered Up. But it's been a long time since I played it. I could be wrong. Yeah,
I don't remember. I thought there were, but
I think it's just. I'm going to say let's just go for time. Unless there's okay. points, in that case, let's go with points. Why not? All love it. Works on two levels. All right, so stage three, back up top. We're going to switch over to the PlayStation 2 now, and we're going to do a little versus mode action in Twisted Metal Black.
Which is such a good game.
Because you got to have Twisted Metal. It's one of the great... It's one of PlayStation's best like multiplayer things. Now, granted, I could have went War of the Monsters. I went Twisted Metal Black. You got to save something for next year's tournament. So,
right.
So there you go. Versus mode Twisted Metal Black. Makes me happy. I think that's a great thing. And right now, we're kind of all over the map on the different kinds of games you're going to be playing. And that's what I was really going for is... kind of running the gamut on what kinds of things PlayStation games do best, and really just kind of rolling all over the map on the kinds of games that they do. So the non-survivors, the losers from the Twisted Metal Black tournament, head down to round three of the underground, and that would be again picking up your PSP and doing the Patapon versus mode,
which is such a cool little game.
It really is. I've never actually played the versus mode, but I knew it existed, and then I looked up some video of it online. I was like, yeah, cool, man. Let's do that. Let's do a Patapon versus mode. And again, logistics, not 100% positive on, but Patapon.
That's not our job. We're the idea guys, Chris.
Yeah, we're the idea guys. We don't work for Sony.
We should, though.
We should. So, moving on back up. back up to the stage four proper.
This is my favorite one that you came up with.
I'll just read what I wrote. PlayStation 4, Horizon, do something cool. I've never played it.
I love that. That's great. Do something cool.
Basically, what it comes down to is similar to like what they did in Super Mario Odyssey when they did that in the Nintendo World Championships. They basically set you up on like a piece of the game, like a little stage, and they're like, all right, beat this boss that you've never played before or something like that. Now, granted, people have played Horizon at this point, but
sure.
pick some chunk of the game that is very easily definable and then have them do that.
You could do something where like the fastest clear time in a corrupted zone. Where you
something
have
like that,
the,
exactly.
The corrupted mechs walking around and how quickly you could take them out and that sort of thing. That could be very cool.
Perfect. That is pretty much what I had in mind. Minus the actual knowledge of what it is. Now, this was one of the my favorites. Going back down to the underground, pick up your PlayStation 2 DualShock and play some Fantavision. Fantavision.
I had completely forgotten that game existed until I looked at your list.
And that's what makes this so awesome, because it's one of those games that anyone who's been a longtime PlayStation fan, you know Fantavision exists. It's in the right back of your head somewhere.
You might not have played it.
Yeah. And like, that's what's also great about watching the Nintendo World Championships. Like, now you never know what game is going to come up next. And like, they do these really fun like announcements of the next game as they're about to happen. So can you just imagine being involved in this tournament? You're being in the underground and you're like fighting your way back into the tournament. And then all of a sudden you hear fireworks. And you're like, what the hell? Oh, I got to play Fantavision. How do you even play this game?
Shit.
And then have to figure it out, and it'll be versus mode, because there is a competitive mode in Fantavision. So make them all play against each other.
God, I don't know that I've played that game since it came out, which was at the PlayStation 2 launch.
How was that?
I just popped up a video for it.
Oh. Yeah, I have not played it since the PS2 launch either, because it's freaking Fantavision.
Because it's Fantavision, and why would you do that to yourself?
So back up to stage 5 in the tournament proper. We're finally getting some PlayStation Vita action, and we'll be playing the PlayStation Vita version of PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale.
Not a great game.
No, I agree. Not a great game, but it's a big competitive PlayStation game. I feel like having a PlayStation like Tour de Force tournament and not including this game would be kind of silly.
I would agree. It's not a bad game, but it tries to be too much Smash Brothers without going all the way for it.
Yeah, it's also kind of one of those. It's one of those weird things that Smash Brothers works because of how iconic the characters are in Nintendo's pantheon, and PlayStation. Sony doesn't really go for that. Like, they really kind of make the experiences more like the stars of their game, if that makes sense. And a lot of the stars of the game aren't ridiculous and cartoony. They're realistically proportioned and or hyper violent. So like Kratos and the friggin' Big Daddies from BioShock or whatever, like, it just never felt right.
It was always just a little left to center.
Yeah, something was just off. It was a decent game, but I understand why it didn't take off like Smash Brothers did, because it's not like we're all sitting around wanting to, you know, fight Fat Princess versus Parappa the Rapper or something. That's not like something that kids were talking about at the playground.
No.
Not definitely like not. There is no Mario versus Sonic rivalry in the PlayStation pantheon. There just isn't. Which is fine. That's why we're playing it on the Vita.
Yeah.
Underground number 5. It's another one that I like. It's totally, totally out of left field. Original PlayStation Frogger beat all 5 retro stages. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
The retro stage, PlayStation Frogger is amazing. If you've never played it, it's really, really good. It's basically like they took the original arcade Frogger and expanded on it, very similar to like Donkey Kong 94, except this was before they tried to turn it into some like crazy ass platformer franchise thing. It was just like, let's expand on the idea of basic Frogger and have some fun with it. It's a really brilliant little title. It's just the right amount of content. It's a delight. And those retro stages are, you know, easy to pick up, difficult to master. And those would be, you know, figuring out who can get through those. I think that, and there's definitely points involved in this. So having a point total at the end, big fat thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I like that one.
So this is another one. It's another good one. It's another winner for me. Finals. We're in the finals now. The game one of the finals is original PlayStation Metal Gear Solid VR missions.
This is the only one when I went through my list and said I didn't waffle. The only one I came close to was putting in VR missions instead of Ape Escape.
Fastest time for the first 10 levels of sneaking mode, no weapons. Because you blow through those pretty quick if you know what you're doing.
Right.
And that would be really fun to watch. Because, like, at this point, there's not, like, 20 people on stage anymore. At this point, you're down to, like, four.
Right.
And so you're watching four different screens, these people just running at the same time, trying to get through these VR missions. I think that would just... Watching competitive VR missions sounds like so much fun to me.
It really does. The VR missions thing was so cool.
Yeah, it was a great little add-on after Metal Gear Solid.
I loved it.
Final game, stage two. No, finals, stage two. Not like the actual final game. The finals, stage two, would be God of War. And I would, again, go with the defeat some sort of boss. Some flavor of giant, difficult creature to defeat in that game, again, being like a race. And this would be your final three, right? So You got your final four in the final stage one. And then you've knocked out one person, and now you've got three people competing for this, and this will give us our final two to go off in the championships.
So, now, would this be the new God of War?
New PS4 God of War. Sorry, okay. I didn't specify that. Okay. Because you've got to have the newest, baddest thing on your system. You know, you've got to have that big thing. You know, looking at the games on the Nintendo World Championship, you know, they finished on Odyssey and they started on Breath of the Wild, you know.
Right.
They had, you know, Samus Returns in there and Splatoon 2. So you've got the newest and brightest because you're also using this as a promotional tool.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, it's freaking awesome. So, yeah. Defeat some sort of awesome boss in God of War.
One of the Valkyries, I think, would be a good fight.
Yeah, agreed. That's actually, yeah, what you were just talking about. That would be perfect, defeating one of the Valkyries, if that's even possible for people to figure out in case they had never played the game before. But here's hoping they would have played it by the time they got to the PlayStation World Championships. And then the championship should be a new game. It should be a game that either has been announced, it hasn't come out yet, or just a game that we don't know about yet. Because that's the coolest way to polish off a tournament.
I would say if it were coming out this year... it should just be an essay contest about what the fuck you think Death Stranding is.
The championships are a word problem, but you have to type them out with a PlayStation DualShock.
Absolutely. Like, explain to me what the fuck is going on with Norman Reedus's baby mouth. I don't understand it.
Oh God. But yeah, cause that's the coolest way to end a tournament. There's never been a cooler tournament ender than like the thing in the wizard where they Super Mario Brothers 3, heads explode. It's amazing. That's
what it should be. It should be Super Mario Brothers 3. The end.
Nobody would see that shit coming,
but it should be there should be a licensing agreement between Nintendo and Team Ico, and Team Ico should recreate the first level of Super Mario Brothers 3, which means this tournament won't be able to happen until 2027 at the earliest. However, a Team Ico fucking style.
See, now I'm thinking of like, you know, doing like Team Ico's take on Bob-omb Battlefield from Super Mario 64.
I love it.
So like you're not even playing as Mario, you're playing as the dude from Shadow of the Colossus, and you have to take down the King Bob-omb a la Shadow of the Colossus.
You're playing as Wander trying to take down. That's awesome.
Yeah, rolling on your horse through Bob-omb Battlefield.
What a great idea this
is. And the music is all Super Mario 64, but it's all drawn like...
But it's all ethereal looking and
exactly.
Shit.
It's all like dark and gray and what
a wonderful idea.
This is the best idea ever.
This is a really, really good idea. Team Ico should make everything. Team Ico and WayForward. They should. Those are the two companies. That's it.
Everybody and Drinkbox.
And drink. But, well, yeah, good point. No, they didn't. They said they wouldn't come on and do an interview, so I'm done with them.
Screw them.
They've burned this bridge. How dare they?
So there you go. That's my idea for a PlayStation World Championships 2018. What do you think?
I think it is a very, very cool idea. I like it. I don't know which I like better, the tournament style or the, you know, the time challenge.
You know what? I like them both, and I think that the time challenge should be how you qualify for the big championships. Because I think they put that out as like a thing that you can download on your PS4.
I was just going to say that's a thing, like you could just download it and
Or set it up in locations, and like kind of like how they did the qualifying rounds for the Nintendo World Championships, where you went to Best Buys and competed there. You know, you could set them up in retail locations and say, go to this location. This is an official place where you can play this exact thing, and then have people track the scores and then send people out to the World Championships.
They would be at Sony World stores.
Yeah. It's Sony World stores.
All like four of them that are left, I think. I think there's one in the Fashion Square Mall in Orlando.
Really?
Wow. Like there was a Sony store down there. Might not have been Fashion Square. Doesn't matter.
Regardless. I mean, obviously... Yeah.
No, that's a very cool idea.
Straight up ripping off the Nintendo World Championships is one thing, but I mean, Sony's never been shy about copying Nintendo's successes before, no. So...
Why would they be?
Exactly. Why would they be? They always do it with their own flavor. And I think doing something like this, like PlayStation now at this point has a very rich history. There's so many great things that are attached to the PlayStation brand. And it's so different from Nintendo's history, but it's a video game history that's so worth celebrating. And I feel like having this kind of fun with it would be really, really cool. Now, granted, a lot of what we talked about were things that were rated M, so it does kind of limit the appeal of this a little bit.
It does, but
at the same time,
there's ways around it.
Yeah, exactly. There's ways around it. Like maybe they don't include God of War. I mean, I don't know how violent Horizon is, but I mean, really outside of God of War, I really don't think anything else on here is so bad that they couldn't show it on, like, so that was one of the cool things. I think the last Nintendo World Championships were aired on like Disney XD as they were happening.
They were.
Was awesome. I sat and watched the whole darn thing. It was super fun. So, I don't know.
And this, you could air it on Twitch and on YouTube and, mm-hmm. you know, on Sony's Crackle, because they keep advertising that shit to me.
It's still a thing, huh?
It's still a thing.
I didn't realize Crackle was still out there.
Yeah, I keep talking about it. They just advertised that you can watch Dumb and Dumber on Crackle, so that's cool.
Yay!
Want to hear the most?
I
sound
love
in the world?
Dumb and Dumber, no, but I'm not exactly hurting for ways to watch it.
I don't know. You know, you say that now, but if you try and go pull it up, you might actually be hurting if you don't have Crackle. Who knows?
I mean, I just have it digitally. So. Oh,
I own multiple copies of it in case one gets scratched.
I have it on DVD. I'm good. I can watch Dumb and Dumber whenever I want.
I have a VHS backup.
Yes.
I have the audiobook. Great. This Jim Carrey being stupid. No, this would be such a cool idea. And I am sure, and I'm actually not being a dick right now, I am sure one could be done for Xbox as well.
I'm sure it could. I don't think it'll be quite as interesting because Xbox just has the three consoles to choose from.
I don't know. I mean, you got Voodoo Vince, you got Cameo, you got...
Stop it.
Voodoo, see, you like how I did that? I set you up with a good one in Voodoo Vince because that game's actually badass.
Yeah.
And then I threw Cameo in there. It was shitty of me.
But, you know, like, I'm looking at right now from...
Backing up some bullshit in a minute. I don't know. How do you play Blinks?
A little bit. It's kind of shitty.
Yeah? Is it?
I didn't like it.
How do you play it, though? Like,
you're running around with like a time vacuum or something? Jeez,
yeah,
I don't
like,
know.
Do you
it's
vacuum
like a
3D up time?
Platformer. I really don't remember. I've played
it. Sounds stupid.
Yeah, looks stupid, too.
Like, I'll just give you a clock. There you go. Game over. Fuck. Anyway.
But I'm looking at, right now I'm on a Nintendo's E3 page, mm-hmm. and like, these tournaments are so much fun at E3. Like, mm-hmm. the Smash Invitational from a few years ago was just... It was just a ridiculously fun thing to have at E3. And I love so much about Nintendo's approach to E3 these last couple of years, even when they haven't had great presentations like the Star Fox year, yeah. Like they still, I like this, you know, not necessarily the live stage show thing, because what's kind of happened with that is nobody's really pulling off, like nobody's having a successful stage show and pulling off dumb stunts anymore. Like
right.
the PlayStation conference was just like, all right, here's some trailers. And then they left and then yeah. played trailers for 15 minutes. Like, okay, why are we watching this live on stage? Like,
yeah.
why not just do a here? Controlled presentation? Like, why are they doing this on stage where there's like weird little hiccups with timing and stuff? Like, why not just do a video presentation like Nintendo does?
Yeah.
I feel like that's definitely the wave of the future as far as doing E3 presentations, because there's so much that can go wrong with those live performances, and sometimes it's absolutely amazing. And it's sad right. to think that like you're not going to get something like that, you know, Zelda at E3 moment again. You know, and like Sony, what was it, a couple of years ago when they dropped bomb after bomb with like, and Shenmue 3 is happening in 2056, and the Final Fantasy 7 remake is on its way someday, we promise. And it's like, just
we swear to God,
making dreams come true left and right for Yakuza games 3, that aren't coming out for shit. Years.
Or but it was like that, 6 or whatever the fuck it was.
That shit was awesome to watch. But like, as cool as that is, showing off this other stuff, like these tournaments, like I'm friggin' jazzed for this Smash Brothers tournament and the Splatoon World Championships. Like, I'm really jazzed to catch these mm-hmm. things, because that's super fun. I'm so excited for E3 this year. I cannot wait to see what they have in store. I really hope there's good surprises.
When is it?
June 12th through 14th.
Okay. So we're about a month out.
We've,
is that later than it usually is?
No, I don't think so. I think it's usually around.
I thought it was first week of June. And whatever.
Doesn't matter. We've got we've got a few weeks of let's see, we've got this show, and then we've got one more show, the 10, 20, 30, and then I guess what is it, 11th and 12th. So we've got either the first week of June or second week of June is gonna be our predictions episode. So
all right.
We're coming right up on it. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Almost at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, almost. We did pretty well. I might get mm-hmm. to bed.
Mm.
So anyways, that's our show. That was a lot of fun.
It was. It's a really good idea.
This is. And I hope it goes to show that I really do love PlayStation. I do. I mean, I know I'm like the Nintendo guy, and I adore Nintendo before anything else, before just about anything else in the world. But I really like PlayStation as well. I have the utmost respect for them, and I want to see them continue to succeed in the direction they're succeeding, because I really like this difference that's going on right now. Like the competition between Xbox and PlayStation, I think, is silly, because they're so similar, except for exclusives, which Sony seems to be the only ones that have.
Yeah.
Unless you're like really, really into specs on paper. And then it's like, you know, yes, the Xbox One X is stupid powerful, but like, I dare you to look at God of War and think that there's something wrong with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love that. But I love that Sony is succeeding at making it, just having this completely different kind of library than the Switch, which is also succeeding with a completely different library than the PlayStation 4. I love that about gaming right now. That
me too.
The two biggest names are doing two completely different things, and there's no reason to not be like, you can get both systems and have completely different experiences in all different directions, and it's wonderful. And I feel like the industry would not be where it is in the best possible way right now because of what PlayStation's doing with PS4.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Join us next week for our landmark 202nd episode. I had an idea for something, and I don't even know if we did this before. So, Dan, if you think this is a terrible idea, then veto it. But I thought it would be fun to talk about some of our favorite and least favorite twos in games.
I think we've done it before, but
I think we did it before, but I think it was like eons ago. I think it was like we were still in like single digit episodes back when we did this. So I wouldn't mind revisiting this topic, because I think it would be a lot of fun.
All right. I'm into it.
So a bunch of our favorite and least favorite twos. We're talking like Super Mario 2, Devil May Cry 2, you know, these kinds of things. Because second games in series are usually really interesting or really boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Without question.
Yeah. There's usually something really there's usually something to talk about there. So I think that might be a lot of fun. And, you know, 202. I'm tired. Once again, you can get in touch with us at malikek.com, as well as all. Let's see if I can get through this without screwing it up, huh?
Not all a right. chance.
As well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can find us individually on Twitter too. I'm at Geekade Chris. That's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, where can the good peoples find you?
At Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher. Or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on geekade.com for even more fresh original content. Ha! I did it.
I know. I have to talk shit to you, because then you do it right.
No, seriously, I didn't think I'd be able to do it because I screwed up my own name.
Chris Randadbod.
And also, if you haven't seen it yet, I have written a 4-page article in the new issue of Nintendo Force Magazine. It's an awesome print magazine that you can order online and get mailed to your house. And this one is themed around Nintendo Labo. It comes with a papercraft thing by Limited Run Games. There's also a trading card for Night Trap for some reason.
Because why not?
Because why not? But no, it's a great magazine. I'm honored to share ink with the people that are in this magazine. There's just so much talent involved. And it's a wonderful thing. And it's my biggest printed, published work yet. So 4 whole pages about old Nintendo peripherals that are weird. So check that out. That's it, everybody. Cool. What?
It's very cool. Oh,
you're very cool.
I was
Thanks
celebrating
for listening.
Fuck you. Not you, the listeners, but you, Chris. Fuck you.
Fair enough. That's it, everybody. Keep playing games.